Hello and welcome to a very special episode of The Laydown. I'm Ryan and I cannot tell you how thrilled I am to share this interview that I did with Ashley Audrain for her new novel, The Whispers. I loved this book and I had such an amazing time chatting with her about the dark side of parenthood, reading and writing dark books, parenting and writing in a pandemic, and so much more. I can't wait for you all to hear it, so let's jump right into my interview with Ashley Audrain. Hi, Ashley Audrain, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Oh, I'm so great. I'm so delighted to have you on the podcast. Oh, my goodness.
Thank you. Thanks. No, I'm so happy to chat with you today. Thanks.
Oh, my gosh. It's so funny because I am, you know, I'm known for reading like darker things. And after The Push came out, one of my fellow bookseller friends was like, girl, you need to read this book. Like, this was written for you. And I was like, well, thank you.
Take that as a compliment. Yes.
All right. So when I got offered, I was like, oh yeah, no, obviously.
Thank you.
Obviously,
so
we're
much.
Doing The Whispers, which came out yesterday, right?
It did. Congrats. Yeah.
Thanks. How you doing? So how you feeling?
Good. Good. You know, I sort of forgot how like overwhelming pub day is in the best way, you know. Yeah. And you just get so many messages and things from people, and it's so nice. Like, it is such a unique, you know, experience, and it's really special. And it's it's fun. When The Push came out, it was in the thick of the pandemic. We were all in lockdown, everything was closed, the kids were home, so this feels better. We'll say.
Oh, good. That's good. I love when people will refer to it as like a book birthday. And I just love that because it is, it's a celebration. It's just like, yay, it's here.
It's true. And I have a 5-year-old and an 8-year-old. And so they don't, that concept, book birthday, they can understand.
Yes. I love that. Okay. So for the listeners who haven't gotten to read it yet, they're in for such a treat. Could you tell us a little bit about The Whispers?
Sure. Yeah. So it's about four neighboring women who live on Harlow Street, and they don't quite realize the ways in which their lives are connected until there's a tragedy that happens on the street one night involving one of the families. And that tragedy sort of acts as this thread that's pulled that kind of then unravels each of their lives in different ways and sort of forces them to face, you know, the secrets that they've held for a long time and sort of face, you know, the whispers in their lives that they've long been quieting for various reasons.
Mm-hmm. And I want to talk about the title for a second because with The Push, you should have seen the look on my face when I realized what the title was referencing. Like, I had to put the book down and like pace my house a couple times and then like keep going. And so I wonder if you could talk a little bit about The Whispers and kind of where that inspiration came from.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, I did want to find, like, titles are so funny. When The Push came to me, it was like, I wasn't thinking about the book or trying to come up with a title. And it was like the sort of creative fairies just came along and like magically gave me that title, which was wonderful. And I was sort of waiting for that to happen with The Whispers too. But how it happened was, yeah, so I the concept of The Whispers, I should say, as the kind of inspiration for what became the title is, I was like writing about this idea of kind of women's intuition and kind of this feeling that something's not right in your life and what do you do about it? And I'd gone away for the weekend to work on the book. It was during the pandemic and I sort of got away just to be productive for a weekend. And I'd gone for a walk. I was sort of stuck and went for a walk in the woods there just threw on sort of a podcast kind of haphazardly. And it ended up being an Oprah podcast and she's interviewing her best friend, Gail King. Mm-hmm. And they're talking about, you know, Gail, quite frankly, is talking quite candidly about this experience of, you know, being really busy in life, midlife, kids, career, and sort of coming home one day and being completely shocked to find her husband was having an affair with somebody that they knew. And she sort of says, like, I had no idea that this was going on. And Oprah sort of, you know, in Oprah's wonderful way, kind of stops her and challenges her to say, like, did you really not know? Like, did you, you know, or were there whispers in your lives kind of, you know, kind of speaking? Was there a whisper of something? And they go on to kind of talk about this concept of the whisper in your life and how we all feel it. Like, it's something we've all had at some point in our life, you know, to varying degrees. And it was just so bang on exactly what I was writing about, you know, that weekend. And it was like this other little nice creative gift. I didn't think of it for the title until later. Like I had that line from, you know, Blair in the book talking about the whispers, and a friend had read an early copy and had been like, what about the whispers? You know, what about this line here? which so that then kind of that became the title. And then it's kind of worked in other ways in the book too. It sort of has several different meanings, but
Yeah, I was gonna say they kind of like the whispers kind of manifest in a couple different ways throughout the book, which I thought was very cool.
Oh, thanks.
I loved that. I love the themes that you write about. And in fact, the whispers kind of feels like a continuation of some of the dark themes that you explore in the push. And I wonder if you could talk about like what draws you to writing about these dark themes.
Yeah, I don't know. I think I've always sort of, you will relate to this, as you have just said, that you like kind of the darker things. And I do too. Like, I think I always gravitate towards the sort of the darker side of things. And I think that's where to me, that's the place that's most interesting, is like writing about the thing that scares you, or writing about the thing you fear most, writing about the thing that makes you anxious. Like, I enjoy kind of writing about the uncomfortable and reading about it too, as a reader. But yeah, and I think, that is sort of the kind of like, when I started writing The Push, I had just become a mother. For the first time. And I was so like really just interested in all the women who were becoming moms around me and like what that experience felt like. You just mentioned earlier that you had a 2-year-old. And so you know that you're sort of in that land right now. But it just really felt so interesting to me that like I sort of was thinking like, yes, you have like so much love for this child, but you also have so much fear of like what this is and being a mother and what the experience is. Are you doing it right? Are you gonna screw up your kid somehow? Are you, there's a lot of fear in motherhood too, but we don't focus on that. We don't really talk about that. We like talk about, we say all the things we're supposed to say, and it's just interesting to me that motherhood is still that, it's still that thing, that seems to just endure through the decades, like through the generations. And so, yeah, I just wanted to go deeper into that and take a look at like what is the real darkness there that we all feel seeds of. And then the whispers was sort of a continuation of that, of like mothers that are at a slightly different place in life. They're a little bit older, their kids are a little bit older. And so they're sort of, yeah, I think I'll always be interested in that kind of space.
Yeah, totally. And I think as a reader, like, I know a lot of people when they become mothers, like they can't read like horror anymore or whatever. Like I have a lot of friends who are like, I can't. I'm too in it. Like I'm too empathetic to it. Whereas I was almost more drawn to horror novels and thrillers about parenthood and children because it was in ways cathartic for me because it was like, well, okay, it's not that bad. Like what I have going on then is not, I'm making better choices than this person or my kid isn't evil, like which is great. But it's interesting talking about how like we don't talk about the dark sides of motherhood. And when I so I have a 5 and a 2-year-old, and when I had my 5-year-old, this was 2017, so pre-pandemic and whatever. And when I would have friends tell me they were pregnant, I was like, I will be the person that you can vent to about every dark, intrusive thought in your head. And like, I will reassure you that it's okay. And like, you're not like this is real. Like these things are real. We go through these insane emotions. It's like the highest highs and the lowest lows, and no one ever talks about the lowest lows, which is wild to me.
It is wild. I totally agree with you. That is exactly what I thought, when I became a mother, and like, and I can totally relate to that, to what you're saying. Like, I had, my son was really ill. Like, he had a chronic illness and he was in the hospital a lot, and that was like its own challenge, but I really did, like, I felt very connected to him right away. I loved him right away. Like, I didn't have kind of postpartum depression or anything. We were, again, dealing with a different situation. But I think I wanted to go to those dark, dark places as a way of being like, well, this is worse than what I'm going through. It's exactly what you're saying as a reader. Like, you just get curious about all of that. Like, about, it's like you can relate to it. You want to push, you want to dig further, and you want to keep poking and keep pushing to kind of see where it can go. So I really relate to that. Yeah. As a writer and a reader. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. So this book, you kind of bounce between these four different perspectives of these four women, and which is so much fun to like bounce between them. And I listened to the audiobook, and the narrator does such a great distinctive job with each voice, which was phenomenal.
That's great. Oh, I love to hear
And
that. Thank you.
yeah, it was
Cool.
great. I could always tell who was whose brain I was in, even if I missed the first, like, it's Blair. I was like,
Awesome.
I know who this is. And I wonder, was there a perspective that was easiest to write, and was there one that was hardest to write for you?
Oh yeah, they were, I would say they at different times they were like easy and hard. It sort of depended on like where I was at with each of them. I think that, and I did do, I would say like the majority of the work that I did on this book and revisions was character, like was all kind of like almost like taking a turn and focusing on one character at a time to like build them up, make them stronger, make us more empathetic, like really get into like the meat of who each of them were. I think Rebecca's story, so she's this ER doctor at working at a children's hospital. She's like in her late 30s, she's trying to have a family. And she can't keep a pregnancy. She can get pregnant and then she can't seem to keep the pregnancy. And she really struggles with that. That is a huge issue kind of in her marriage and in her life. And yet she is this very like science-minded individual, who relies on logic and fact all day, at her job. And she's a scientist, essentially. And so she really struggles with that, the difference between that she's told by her fertility doctors, well, you just have to have hope and miracles happen. And that's just not the world she lives in, So I found her character sort of came to me like probably the most fully formed of all of them, just in terms of like her conflict, the conflict that she had, which is very clear to me. But I did, and she's so consumed, like she's so consumed with this issue in her life, which I think is very real for women that are going through fertility problems, right? Like it takes over everything. It is all you can think about. It disrupts like all the moments of your day and all the joy you're supposed to have and all of it. And so her she was a bit more clear. And Blair and Whitney, because they are sort of foils to one another, they are women operating at very opposite ends of the spectrum, but they live across the street from each other and they are best friends connected through their children. Their children are friends. And Whitney is this very, career driven, like successful woman who wants to make a lot of money. She wants to have wealth. She wants to be, she believed that, like, which is true, like, financial independence is wealth and she wants that. And then best, and she's not so into the role of mother. She has three kids. She sort of gets by. She does it. She has a lot of help at home. But she would rather stay late at the office than go home and deal with bedtime. And Blair is just the opposite. She's this very martyr mother who, has given up like 7 or 8 years of her life to just be a mom, and that has given her a lot of satisfaction and fulfillment. And it was a choice she actively made and she had the privilege of making, and she loved it. But now she's hit a point in her life where she feels like it's not enough and she can't figure out why and she can't figure out what she's going to do next. And she's feeling quite lost and sort of like losing the sense of value that she once had. Both of those characters, their inner conflict is a little more nuanced. Like they both, they, and they sort of, and I think their characters sort of develop off of each other, like we see, because we can kind of hop heads in this book, between the four women, we see the way that Blair wants to be perceived and the way she really is perceived by Whitney, and then vice versa. We see this kind of personality that Whitney thinks she's projecting to the world, and then like what people are actually saying about her is very different, And they each envy something like very deeply in each other. They envy what they don't have themselves or what they're sort of missing themselves. But they also want to keep a certain pride about themselves too. And so there's a lot at play, I think, in that friendship. So they were fun to develop just because they acted as these reflections of one another. And then Mara, the fourth character, who's this, wonderful like 80-year-old woman who lives next door. She's a Portuguese immigrant and she's, lives this porch culture, there where she sits on the porch of her house and watches the street, go about their business. She's a little voyeuristic. She sort of knows more than any of them would ever assume she knows. And she has her own kind of, dark past and, has been through some trauma in her life. And she was a mother and Yeah, she, I really loved writing her character. Like yeah, there was nothing I really struggled about with her. You know, she really came to me pretty clearly too. And I just really enjoyed like the process of being in her mind and building out her story and who she was and all of that. So yeah, I love them all. I feel them all. Yeah.
They're all such great characters. I do. Mara, I love Mara so much. I want all the good things for Mara. Like,
Me
I
too, me too.
adore her.
Thank you.
She just understands so much so quietly. She's just like, I know something you
Yeah.
don't know, and I'm not going to tell you because it's, need to know it yet. Like, I love her.
Right. She
I
sort of
love her.
knows, she knows what she knows, and she understands the weight of it and the power of it, and she sort of decides when and how to use it.
Yes.
And she's just got so much wisdom, like so much
Yeah.
wisdom, you know. And I
Oh.
think sometimes we forget that about women who we look at who are in their, 80s or 90s. Like we sort of see them in a certain way, and it can be very ageist sometimes, you know. And we forget about the history they have had and what they know and what they've been through. And I wanted that on the street, you know. I wanted that dynamic there. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And sort of speaking about women aging, sort of aside from her, the other three characters are entering kind of their midlife struggles, which I feel like we don't often get the female perspective of the sort of midlife crisis. It's usually like, ah, oh, the man bought a Ferrari. He's having a midlife crisis. And so
Exactly.
I'm curious, like, how you kind of developed that and kind of looked at that in your novel.
Yeah, I'm really interested in like midlife, probably because I am midlife. I recently turned 40, 41 actually. And I feel like at this point in life, like our midlife, like this generation, our midlife looks so different than like the generations before us, and especially our boomer parents, you know. Like it could not be more different in a way, right? Like we are so much worse off financially. Like there are so many families like at midlife right now with kids and all of it who like aren't we don't have the financial strength that our parents did at all. And that really limits a lot of like choice and opportunity and the way we live our lives and all of it. Childcare, equality, like the gender different divide in our households, all of it. And we're also having families like so much later, many of us, right, are having kids. Like I have a lot of friends who are early 40s and just starting their families, and that just was not the case like in generations prior, right? And so that creates like such a total different dynamic in terms of like where you feel you're at, and maybe you've achieved a lot in a career and then had your family, but that comes with a whole nother set of problems and like the emotional labor you take on at a certain point in your life and all of it. Like there's so many factors, and there's been a lot of really like just brilliant examinations of this. I loved the book and the show Fleischman Is in Trouble, that and I think it did that takes such a good look at this point in life, for like a very privileged Manhattan set. But yeah, just so interesting. And so I wanted to play on that. And I love that you brought up that idea of like, you know, the man leaving the family with a sports car and like going off with some younger woman. Like that is just like not life right now, right? Like no one's like, I don't think like men aren't doing that in their 40s now. Like it just, if they ever did, but like it's not, it's just not, that's not an option, right? And so many families I know like will say like that they know a friend or an acquaintance or whatever, where like they just can't afford to split up. Or like it's not like there's that's one example, but there's so many reasons right now why families look different and feel different. And I think all of that, you know, leads to what happens in the book, which is that, you know, we sort of get hit this point in life where, you know, instead of like peacing out in a sports car, we are having like a real emotional deep reckoning with ourselves about who, like who we are, how did we get here, like why are we not where we thought we were going to be or where we're expected to be at this point in life. And the window feels like it's closing, you know, for possibility and opportunity, for a lot of people. Like, and so what do you do? What do you do if you do have this feeling like life is not what it should be? Like, how do you make a change? Like, can you? Is it, what's the consequence of that? Like, all of those are questions, kind of, I think, in these women's minds. Yeah.
Yeah, and kind of like jumping off that, like, At one point, I was like, oh, like every person in this book needs so much therapy, but like, who
Yeah.
can afford therapy?
Who can afford it? Who can afford it? And who has time? Like, people don't, that's not like people aren't, like, no, I have totally have friends who are like, I would love to do therapy, but show me where it fits in the week. Like, and I get that. I totally get that. And it's funny you say that because there are definitely people with the push would like email me, like readers would be like, Blythe just needs to go to therapy. Like, she did, if she saw a therapist, everything would be better. And I totally couldn't agree more. I am so pro therapy. I totally agree that, but agree with that. But like, I can't give my characters everything or else there would be no book. If I solved the problems with a therapist, we wouldn't have a story.
We need to have conflict.
But it's always a good point. It's a great point.
Listen, Blair's trying to get therapy, but she just can't get seen by a therapist. No one's accepting new patients. We just went through a pandemic.
That is the answer. You're exactly right. Yes.
So another thing that this book tackles, which I love, is female friendships. I love reading about female friendships, and I especially love reading like thrillers and horror books about female friendships because so often they can suddenly be so toxic, like right beneath the surface, which I think we see with like Blair and Whitney in particular, of this like, we're smiling, we're besties, we kind of want to kill each other sometimes. Like, and I wonder if you could expand on that a little bit and what it was like writing that.
Yes, I'm so glad you asked that. I just did like a roundup for Crime Reads, like the website Crime Reads, about this exact thing, about
Nice.
books that I love that feature toxic mom friends. And I think there's and there's, I totally agree. I love reading about female friendships too. And then there's the next layer, which is mom friends, which are the women in your life who like maybe you wouldn't necessarily be friends with this woman, but you are because you have your connection to your children, which is very much Blair and Whitney in the book. And those are like wonderful friendships in a sense, because like you do open yourself up to people that you normally might not connect with, and they are, our mom friends are like lifelines. We've all experienced that. Like mine certainly are, I'm sure yours are too. And you love them dearly, but the cynical writer part of me feels like they're actually perfect territory for like all the things that we love to like inject into a rela like into a relationship in these kinds of books, which is, the toxicity of envy and of secrets and betrayal and revenge. And you can really do that, with a lot of these friendships and books. And so, yeah, there's like several that I have loved reading that really do that so well. And I wanted to write about that. I, in the push, there was a French one friendship between Gemma and Blythe that was a very kind of unusual friendship. And it wasn't like, a huge relationship in the book, but I loved writing about it, and I really wanted, that was like, okay, I loved that so much. I thought in the next book, like, I really just want to go there with like, a bigger storyline of friendship. Yeah.
I love that. It's so compelling to read. I love it. You mentioned earlier that you were writing this in lockdown. What was that experience? 'Cause like I gave birth in 2020, right? So, I was right there with you with like the parenting in lockdown, crazy pandemic. I can't imagine also writing a novel about subjects like this. What was that like for you?
Oh, well, first of all, it was really hard to have a baby during that time. So that I hats off to you, because that was tough. And you also had a toddler at the time at home. So you were, yeah, that's hard. I mean, yeah, I feel like, yeah. So my kids were, I guess, like 2 and 5 when the pandemic started. And it was just so hard. Like, it really was. I was in, I had, and again, like, I say this all with the disclaimer that, I'm not a frontline worker. I'm not working in a hospital or a grocery store. Like, those people had it way worse. But I will say that, like, being home kind of, with the kids, and the schools here in Toronto, where I am, were closed for like an insane amount of time. Like, it was months and months and months and months that our schools were closed and locked down. Like, it was, pretty intense. So the homeschooling and all of that with little kids, which is just does not go well. Yeah, it didn't leave like a lot of time or space for creativity or productivity. And I was, working through the revisions of the book at that time. And to me, like, all the work is really done in the revision. Like, that is the heavy lifting time when the book needs to get better, And so that was stressful for sure. And I sort of got on this routine of waking up at like 5 in the morning and just plugging away for like a couple hours until the first kid woke up. That dreadful feeling of like you can hear the footsteps coming downstairs,
Yeah,
and you're like,
100%. Yeah.
I'm done here. Laptop closed. We're done for the day.
Yep.
And it was, really hard and stressful. But also, I think in a way, looking back on it now, like I was very productive in those couple hours every day because that
I
was all
bet.
I had. And so
Yeah.
now I feel like, when I look at my workday now, which is, basically between the hours of drop off and pick up at school, I probably, if I'm honest with myself, like got as much done in those early morning hours as I do all day now. There's something about that squeeze of time, But yeah, it definitely, I think there's probably the, I think the, there was a lot, even though I'd had the idea before the pandemic, there was probably a lot that like a lot of influence in how that those days felt that showed up in the book. It's sort of like when I look back, I'm like, that's it's interesting. Like in the pandemic, our lives got so small, our worlds got so small. And you only were really like you would look out your window and then see the same people every day and the same houses every day. And that was kind of it. And that is very much sort of what happens in this book too,
Yeah,
a
yeah.
condensed period of time and it's just these four houses. And so it probably did influence it in some way in hindsight. Yeah. But
Yeah.
we're all happy those days are behind us now.
Oh, yeah. I'm so done with lockdown. I can't do
Yeah.
it
Yeah, I
again.
know. I have to say that the air quality here in Toronto is really bad right
Oh,
now because of
right, the
these
fires.
fires that are happening. Yeah, the air quality is just terrible. And yeah, like now these the last 2 days, kind of like being, doing errands in the city and dropping off the kids and stuff. It's like the masks are back. Like everyone's wearing their masks again, and it just gives you this sinking feeling. Like it just this reminder of what that was.
Yeah.
It's really wild. Yeah,
It is.
yeah.
It's crazy. Yeah, it is going to be just forever. I mean, my kids, like, school pictures are they have masks on, the
Yeah.
first day of school with Matt. Like, it's always going to be marked by, like, oh,
It
yep,
will.
they're there in their little masks.
Yeah. It's
It
wild. It's wild.
is.
Yeah.
It is. Well, Ashley, I won't. I could talk to you all day. I love this book. I love The Push. I love all of your books. But I know that you are busy. It's launch week, so I will let you go. But I just want to say thank you so much for chatting with me. I can't wait to hand sell the crap out of The Whispers. I have so many
Oh,
customers that I'm like, this is for you.
thank you. Thank you. That's just so nice to hear. Thanks for the support and your great questions. It was, yeah, I had a lot of fun chatting. Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you so much, and best of luck with the rest of your launch.
Thanks so much. Thank you. Take care.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Huge thanks again to Ashley Audrain for joining me on the podcast. The Whispers is available now from Gibson's Bookstore. You can email us about the podcast at thelaydownpodcast@gmail.com. Make sure you're following us on your favorite social media platforms. We're on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok, and all of those links will be in the show notes, along with this episode's shoppable list, which you can also find at gibsonsbookstore.com/laydown-books. Thank you all so much for listening. Don't forget to subscribe so you'll know when we upload our next episode, and consider leaving us a nice review. Until next time, we'll see you in the bookstore. Bye!